Welcome to the Tripod, where we break down the NRL every game, every week from a pundit perspective. I'm Jacob Wynn. I'm barbecuing alone to recap live round 20, where we did go 4-1 on our best bets. And that included a 10 best bet winning streak that ended last night, unfortunately, with the Broncos. But we just rebounded with the Cowboys, easy as you like, best bet winner there. So that's been a good run for us. Please let me know if you can hear and see me and tune in and join in. And share your thoughts as well with the comments, especially as I am going to unpack these games barbecuing alone. But overall, we have kind of turned our season around now with our winning percentage at 55%. It really didn't look like it was going to be that healthy just a few weeks ago. And I never felt like I should be promising anybody that we're guaranteed to turn it around, because I just don't feel in this business that you should ever promise anybody anything. We can't control the results. But I always felt through the season that we have runs of 10 tips where we might have gone 3-7 or 4-6, but I really didn't feel like they were that bad of tips. And I always felt like there's going to be a run of 10 tips where we're going to go 8-2, 9-1. And in fact, we did go 10-0. So as I said, I think last 3 weeks, 4-0, 3-0, 4-1. What's disappointing, though, is not winning the mixed matchup. We were $1.10 going into the game last night. Again, I'm referring to the Brisbane game. And not only did that cost us the mixed matchup, which we lost by a point, and it's an underdog every week. I think it was 240 or 250 odds this weekend, and we fall agonizingly short, Brisbane only scoring 18 points. We didn't need them to win. But that game was the true multi-killer of the round, and I'm sure you guys can let me know if that hurt your multis. It was a real shock to me. I was really surprised by that Brisbane result. I'll scroll to that I'm talking about now. And with the Cowboys result playing out the way it did, which just finished 5 or 10 minutes ago, I mean, that was two multis. One was 19-1 and one was 33-1 that we shared this week. So that's 50 units of multis that go down because the Broncos couldn't have a good game as we predicted. So that was a true multi killer for us. So our multi record is still bad this season. Mixed matchups, been nothing to write home about, unfortunately. I think about one unit down on those, but we're still in overall profit for the season, which includes the mixed matchup. So that is something that I'm happy about. And I'll talk about all the 8 games probably more briefly because I'm just on my own. As I say, I'll try and interact with your comments. I appreciate the guys who are sending their thoughts through now. And before I go game by game with the results of round 20, which was a successful one for us, why don't we find out how the bookies did? Let's get a word from Tristan at Toppy.
Hello, Tripod family. It is Tristan Merlihan here from Top Sport. It's been one of those weekends. It's been a tricky one to trade, particularly that first game where the line moved from 2.5 out to about 18.5. And the Seagulls are pretty gutsy in the end covering that line. And we just got a result. There was obviously a bit of movement early in the week and we got hit with that 2.5 line. But obviously no coverage at the end. There was a lot of money late towards the minus. Probably the biggest betting game of the weekend was the Sharks against the Rabbitohs, where the Bunnies were back from 2.5 into 1.5. And the fact the Sharks won by one, it was one of those ugly results where you lay a lot of Sharks money head-to-head and you lay that plus. So falling on that one was one of those games where you sit there and you feel a little bit disappointed at the end of it when it went to Golden Point. But then from our point of view, we're fortunate enough to get the big upset of the round, where the Tigers were unbelievably good against the Broncos and caused a massive surprise, which I don't think anyone saw coming after all the controversy from last week. So that was the game that really helped our round from a bookmaking point of view. The games today, Bulldogs are very well backed. The minus short and very significantly there. And then the Cowboys have seen a bit of money in this last game where I'm recording this at half time. So hopefully anyone that had a wager had a bit of success over the weekend. And we'll talk to you all on Wednesday. Thanks.
Thanks, Tristan. Yes, the Padonis sends his regards. And it's been a tough season for the Padonis too, but he's stuck in there. We both stuck at it. We haven't done much differently in the last 3 weeks going 11-1 that we had done in earlier weeks when we struggled. But we always had the faith that long-term we kind of know what we're doing and hopefully we can continue to carry this through. But what we want to do in the recap is talk about what we picked up. Most importantly, what we witnessed in the round of footy that's just been, that can help us moving forward. Now, we know everything that transpired in the lead up to the opening game of round 20. That was the Roosters ultimately defeating Manly at Four Pines 20-10. But with all the Manly outs, the question was going to be just could they compete with the Roosters even if they did play inspired? And it kind of looked to me like early on, the Roosters were going to cruise to a pretty easy victory. And as Tristan mentioned, that line got all the way out to 18.5. And, you know, in the end, it's only a 10-point deficit. But I think with 20 to go, the Roosters are up 20-4. Looked just as likely they could go on with it. You've got to give some credit to Manly that they were able to fight back. But the point I made in the group is what a brutal week it's been for Manly. Go back a week earlier, throw in losing as a favourite to St George. Obviously, all the players out and the worst possible timing on a short week when you're up against a side that's one position higher than you on the ladder. And then the very next day, a side that, you know, still not, wasn't safe in the top eight in Parramatta gets the upset win over the Panthers, and then the Panthers lose Cleary. Of course, I'll get to that. And the side that's right below the Seagulls, or were before this round, the Canberra Raiders, plays Penrith next week, and now Penrith's going to be missing three Origin stars, including their best player. So it really felt like this week couldn't have been any worse for the Seagulls. While I also said on Wednesday, what a stroke of luck for the Roosters to get Manly at this time, and now they'll get a longer prep. And talking just a little bit more about round 21, the Roosters' next opponent is Brisbane. And speaking of suspensions, Brisbane's probably going to, well, will be missing their best forward in Pat Carrigan. So suspensions and discipline and foul play in these games was a big talking point. And I'll make one other point as well. We saw a send-off. We saw Burgess. I feel like I'm jumping all over the shop, but we all know there was a send-off this weekend in that big clash at the prison between Souths and Cronulla. And was that a bit of a harsh call? To me, there's only 3 minutes to go, so it doesn't really matter whether Burgess got a send-off or a sin bin. I thought maybe it was more worthy of a sin bin. But there was a high shot put on by the Manly winger early in this game that wasn't, I think at best it was picked up late and just given a penalty. And I felt like that was just as clean of a high shot. So I thought there should have been a sin bin in this one. And there also should have been a sin bin as I jump to the next game of the round, where Melbourne beat the Warriors 24-12, and we did have a best bet and we did win with +6.5 in the first half. In the end, whether we took the full game line or the first half line, we would have won. The Warriors found themselves down 2 points at halftime, 2 tries each. So that was fine for us. But I also thought, and let me know what you guys made of some of these big decisions, also thought there was a pretty clear incident that was well warranting of a sin bin with Nelson Asofa-Solomona coming down. We had this whole big story about Carfusi dropping the elbow down in the face of Sam Walker. And that, remember, in that incident, Carfusi was the ball carrier. This is Nelson. You've got a lot more control when you're the tackling player. He drops an elbow into the face or jaw of Wade Egan. And this was one of several key position players for the Warriors who got injuries in this game. In the end, Egan is cleared of a major jaw injury. They say he just cracked some teeth. Still nasty stuff. But can someone explain to me how that gets looked at by the bunker? And that's not worthy of a sin bin. But that was a key moment in the game, especially we had Warriors first half. I would have definitely appreciated a Melbourne Storm player rightfully getting sent for 10 minutes to sit down. So I feel like one game we send somebody off, and then other games we see pretty bad foul play, and a penalty just seems to be all that they want to rule for that. In the end, it was a really important result for Melbourne just to get back on track. And while a few other sides that might have been threatening them for a top four spot suffered setbacks, this was huge for Melbourne to snap that four-game losing streak. I keep talking about how Brandon Smith makes a big difference to the side, and he got suspended at the worst possible time of the season for Melbourne. He is back next week, the hectic cheese, and they get this win across the ditch. And it was never going to be a case of Melbourne going over to New Zealand and, smashing them to try and get their season back on track, because they're just not that team. Their outside backs do not blow you away. They really are just trying to hold it together. And, I mean, we saw Grant Anderson, who's done all right, filling in on the wing there. He absolutely butchered a try, which, you know, Melbourne won the first half by 2 points. He would have been under the sticks if he doesn't drop a ball cold that Melbourne made a break from. So we're kind of lucky there. But I ultimately think we got it right. playing the Warriors the way we did. And the Warriors butchered tries of their own too. Warriors had a 3-on-1 in the first half, couldn't execute. In fact, that was the story of the game for the Warriors. They could not execute their opportunities. And I should mention too, the scoreline's 24-12, but it's 4-3. The Warriors could not nail a single conversion, which also helped Melbourne keep them at arm's length. And Melbourne's deserved winners here. And I thought Melbourne got through the Warriors a bit too easy. It seemed like whenever they wanted, like Melbourne was playing up and in defence and really rushing in and shutting down the Warriors' time and space. And as I say, Egan was off for a while with an injury. Harris Tavita got injured and couldn't carry on. And I think Lusick as well was injured at one point. So the Warriors were scrambling to cover some of their key positions on the field. But as I say, Warriors looked like they'd have an opportunity. And a couple of times they did score and Kosi got a double because the Storm were rushing in early and Anderson got caught out. But the Warriors were trying to slide in defence and a few times far too easily, the Storm just shifted the ball and just simple catch and pass stuff and went through, especially on the Storm right edge, Warriors left edge. They made length of the field breaks a couple of times. And apart from the one they butchered, they did also have a lot of joy from that and did ultimately find some points. And as I say, they'll be very happy to get those 2 points. They can still get their season back on track, the Melbourne Storm. Nofaluma is going to come in and join this side just before the August deadline as well. So Warriors not disgraced because Melbourne is still a decent team. But they just left a few too many points out there on the field. Luckily, got enough, especially in that first half, to cash our best bet. And Podonis, in fact, says Nelson should have got March. So, you know, yeah, I definitely think that had to be at least 10 minutes. So it's just the wild inconsistency with these decisions. Of course, the next game had a massive one as well. Nathan Cleary sent off. That's the headline. But Parramatta also 34-10 winners over Penrith. Penrith's only lost 2 games this season. They've both been to Parramatta, funnily enough. Now, it's pretty hard to make a lot out of this game, obviously, when not only the best player on a team, but really any player is sent off after 20 minutes. Now, I know I say that, and Cronulla did win a game earlier this season where they had a player sent off after 20 minutes, Will Kennedy, and that was pretty crazy. But that was more of a gives you an idea of how much the Warriors were struggling at that point in time. But pretty much as soon as Nathan Cleary was sent off, you kind of tossed your hands up and go, well, this is game over. It is worth mentioning as well, the Parramatta was up 12-4 at the time that Cleary got sent off. So I don't think it would be fair to dismiss this victory by Parramatta and say, well, it's purely because Cleary got sent off, because I do think Parra was bang up for this one and it was a great contest. And I'm not going to talk too much about the send-off because I really, my opinion is exactly the same as what I shared a few weeks ago or a few months ago now, when Lawton was sent off, even though that was in our favour. We've had a couple of games where a send-off's been in our favour. We also had a game where a send-off went against us, so that's how it goes. But when Lawton was sent off for Manly against Souths, I said in the recap, like, I think they need to change the rule. I think losing a player and playing a man short for, you know, extended period of the game kills the contest. And isn't it an entertainment product? And people said, oh, but you have to penalise, you know, really dangerous play. You can still penalise the hell out of it. You can give them massive fines. You can give them massive suspensions. But why can't you let the team replace the player, even if it's after 20 minutes? I pretty much just plagiarised the Super Rugby rule, but I think that would be better just for the sense of a contest. Even if Cleary got sent off, Parramatta would have been massively in the box seat. But if there's a notion that Penrith are allowed to replace him after 20, and if they can hang in there and if they can be within 1 or 2 tries, and the funny thing is, the second half, Penrith won, I believe, 6-4. So Penrith actually did hang tough. But that's just my opinion, that send-offs are just too massive, that no one play in a game of rugby league should swing a line by like 20 points. But if you looked at the live line, I mean, if you looked at the live odds, Penrith was out to 500-1 to win the game by halftime. So I just think that it's just too crazy, too harsh in terms of the context of a game. Not that Cleary didn't deserve it. When I saw the tackle, instantly I thought, geez, that was bad. I wonder if that was as bad as it looked. And then you see the replay and I'm gone, not only was that bad, that was Nathan Cleary, geez. And then you check the replay and, yeah, he had the lifting element and the driving down element. And I know that they talk about, well, a couple of his teammates had Dylan Brown tackled up high and then they let go and it makes it look worse. But it's a pretty ugly one. The news has come out that Cleary will accept a 5-game suspension, which is pretty fortuitous for Penrith because there will be 5 games will take him right through to the finals. He wouldn't want to challenge that and risk missing any more games where potentially, you know, if he challenges it, tries to get it downgraded and loses and doesn't plead guilty, it would be 6 or more. And now you could be talking about Penrith playing a finals game without Cleary and suddenly jeopardising, you know, what's been in front of him all season. So he's going to take the 5. My immediate reaction is it doesn't hurt Penrith that much. They have so much separation over the rest of the competition. I think they're 8 or at least 6, if not 8 points clear of the Cowboys. Obviously, the Cowboys just won. They're not going to get caught. They're going to be top, so they're going to be home in the first week of the finals. So I really felt, because we've talked in the last couple of weeks about you know, the odds of Penrith winning the competition and how dominant they are, I really felt like the only thing that could stop Penrith winning the comp would be copping a major injury between now and the finals, somebody not being able to play in the finals. The Luai knee we need to monitor because that could be, if it's a lengthy end, it could be up to 2 months and it could be questionable whether he's back in time for the finals. But if he gets a good rehab recovery, he could come back right around the same time. And if these key players are not playing in the next few weeks, all that means is that they can't get injured in the next few weeks and they can't get wiped out for the season. So it's a funny one because with Cleary being suspended, well, now you know that the nightmare scenario, which would be Cleary injured before the finals, actually can't happen. The only knock you could put on Penrith is they're going to have to worry about bringing new players into the positions. Obviously, Falls, O'Sullivan, these guys have done a job from before, but they don't get to keep getting better and they don't get to have all their best players on the park together. And so there's an argument that Cleary could be rusty coming into the finals, but that's about it. I don't think it's going to jeopardise Penrith too much. On the other side of the equation, massive win for Parramatta, even though you can take away from it and say they beat a side with 12. I really feel like they're up for it. Our best bet was plus 10.5. Luckily, we did play the handicap plus 10.5 rather than an either team 1-12 scenario. We learnt our lesson too many times this season. We've been burned where we liked an underdog. And then instead of just playing the underdog with the line, we said we'll buy ourselves some extra points because it's very unlikely the underdog will win 13 plus. That's burned us twice this season where the underdog did win 13 plus. So this time we just went Parramatta with the line and that's as easy as you like. And again, you can take away from it and say that the send-off changes everything, but Parra started very strong and, yeah, leading by more than a try at a point in time that Cleary gets sent off. You're more than comfortable, even if it's not a send-off. With that line, and I think it was likely to go on and cover. Whether Parramatta would have won, we don't know, but it's very important that they got those 2 points because we have since learned from that game that Mitchell Moses got a finger injury that's going to require surgery that's going to wipe out the rest of his regular season. And I discussed on Wednesday how Parramatta have a really, really tough run of opponents on the stretch home, and their place in the top 8 is not certain or secured yet. Now you lose Mitch Moses. But the fact that they got this 2 points, a game that you probably wouldn't have expected Parra to bank on, that should give them probably enough of a buffer that if they can navigate the next month of footy, they should still find themselves in the finals. I dare say it'll be the bottom half of the 8. And then Moses, no complications if he comes back. Parramatta showed they're a funny side, that they can mix it with some of the better sides in the competition. Perdona says, there's an argument that Penrith's second half was more impressive than Parramatta's first half. And yeah, and as I say, at the point of the send-off, I knew Penrith were done. I knew Parramatta was going to win well. And I actually don't take too much away in terms of what I make from those sides. And that's, I think, why the rule should be looked at potentially, because I do think it spoils the contest. And that's a shame because we were all sitting in front of our TVs Friday night and this promised to be a blockbuster game. We didn't quite get that. On Saturday, much lower standard of footy, especially from the home side, the Gold Coast Titans, who were beaten 36-24, and it probably wasn't even that close in the end. Titans, I think, scored the last couple of tries, But it was close in the first 40 where the Titans were only down 2 or 4 points at halftime. And Tappanay was in the bin as well. And this game was there for the taking. But my biggest takeaway, if I talk about the home side first, is the Titans are just so soft. And there's just no excuse. There's no excuse for some of the tries they let in, like barge overs from dummy half. There's a try they gave up to Joe Tappanay where there's dead set four defenders standing him up in the tackle on the goal line, and he just keeps pushing him backwards and then burrows under, reaches out and scores a try. I don't know how only the worst teams in the competition give up tries like that. And when the Titans got their opportunities, and they did have some opportunities, it just looks like they're working so hard and they're probing and they're throwing the ball from side to side, trying to find an opportunity to crack open an opponent. And the Raiders are making them work hard for their points. I know you might look at the score and say, well, Titans got 24, but I'm telling you, they got some backdoor late tries when the game was totally over. They were never really able to score when they needed to in this match. And the tries they give up are just so soft. The goal line defense is so soft. And Holbrook says in the post-match presser, Kieran Foran can't get here quickly enough. And I just think to myself, like, you haven't signed Darren Lockyer. You haven't signed Cameron Munster. You know, you haven't signed, like, the next Matt Burton. You know, if you think that Foran's going to come in here and solve your issues with how soft your defense is, then that just really speaks to how big your issues are. As for the Raiders, funnily enough, the 36 they put on the Titans in this one is actually the most points they've scored this season. And I do think that their defense really stood up and was strong when it needed to be, because there were times in this game where the Titans could have got back into it if the Raiders gave them anything easy. But as I say, the only easy tries the Titans got was when the result was, beyond any doubt. And that's a huge result for the Raiders. And as I mentioned, as we look forward to round 21, they play Penrith, and Penrith are vulnerable, to say the least. We know Cleary's going to be out. Luai will still be out. Crichton, I'm not sure about that ear injury that needed plastic surgery, but definitely a game where the Raiders have actually got the easiest draw of any of the sides competing to make the finals in the final 6 weeks. They haven't stuffed up the last couple of weeks. They've been a decent favourite over a converted try favourite against New Zealand, got a scare, got the win against the Titans. It's the kind of game, if you don't respect your opponent, you could stuff that up, but they come in, they get the job done. And next week, you will give Raiders a chance against Penrith. I'm not going to foreshadow any of our tips. And I honestly don't like sharing an opinion on games that are a week out when I haven't done a full deep dive. So I avoid weighing in on any conversations or when people hit me up on a Monday or Tuesday, just because I at least wait till team lists and then I start looking at it. And then, of course, I share all my thoughts on a Wednesday. But the Raiders, their destiny's in their hands in terms of making a finals push. Fogarty as well was good in his return against his former club there. This was a cracker of a game, which we did nail with our best bet as well, because we went kind of either team 1 to 11, basically, as the same game multi, and it goes to golden points. So you can't get a game much closer than that. And the only part I probably got wrong, although I thought it was a pretty fair assessment of the game, was if I have to pick the winner, I think maybe Luttrell can just make one more kick than Nicho Hynes. And in the end, they were both very true off the boot. And Luttrell has kicked the ball really well for goal this season. But Nicho has been inconsistent. But he nailed all four kicks in this game for the Sharkies. 20 points they got in regulation, including a couple from out wide. Luttrell did the same. And in the end, Luttrell got more shots for the winning game-winning field goal. Both sides had the opportunities. I think Luttrell had at least three different shots where, you know, if he makes it, he wins the game for the Rabbitohs. All three, I think, sprayed out to the left. Nicho Hynes took his opportunity. This was after the Burgess send-off. I mean, what can you do? Sharks made a half break. He's trying to make a covering tackle. I guess you call it a bit lazy or a bit reckless. Obviously, cleans up Mulitalo high. And then it's not like the send-off decides the game. It was definitely going to be a penalty to Sharks, and Sharks use that penalty, get into the Rabbitohs red zone, line up and kick the game-winning field goal. And that's not the first time that they've won a game this season by a very narrow margin off the boot of Nicho Hynes. And it's an awesome run for the Sharks. Pretty much they've been on a great run ever since their bye. You think about how they got that win I mentioned earlier where they had a man sent off. Like, that lifts your club. When you can win a game where you played with 12 and at one stage 11 and they win that game at home against New Zealand, and then they had this really tough run of opponents and they're looking up and they're saying, geez, we've got to play Cowboys and Storm. Well, they beat both those sides. And you've got to play Penrith. Well, they pushed Penrith pretty hard last week. And the Rabbitohs are one of the form sides in the comp. And this was anybody's game. But give credit to the Sharkies, Andrew Fifita winding back the clock. They're really starting to build into a legitimate threat. And I look at the ladder right now, and things can still change. And upsets do happen. And players get injured or suspended. Or even like what we saw with Nathan Cleary on Friday night. Like, if that happens in a big game and a key player for a side makes a really bad decision or just gets in an awkward position, it can just totally throw chaos, you know, and throw a cat amongst the pigeons and create crazy upsets. But I will say this, it looks to me like second and third is going to be Cowboys Cronulla. And I just feel that's destined to be 2 versus 3, first week of the finals, and one of those sides is going to be hosting a prelim. I really feel like is it Cronulla? Is it Cowboys? I think those sides are pretty level ability sides. That game would most likely, based on the ladder and based on the Cowboys getting those 2 points against the Tigers last week, which you don't need to keep talking about, but be more likely that game might be in Townsville. But who would have really predicted? Two sides that didn't even make the 8 last year. I really feel like there's a very strong chance that it's Cronulla or North Queensland hosting one of those prelims. You'd still probably say Penrith will be hosting the other one, but I think we've learnt that nothing's certain in this competition. Tough loss for the Rabbitohs, because I would say that's probably going to nix their top four hopes or ambitions. They're still, you don't take much away from them to go into a tough venue against a tough opponent, push them all the way down to the wire. And I see comments about people laughing or trying to rip on Latrell because he didn't kick those, you know, those field goal attempts. Like, obviously, in the moment, you've got players rushing at you. You kick a ball slightly differently and it goes one side of the post instead of the other, and suddenly you're the hero, and it goes the other way and people want to make a narrative like you're not clutch or that you choked or that you cost your team the game. The Rabbitohs would not have been this close if they didn't have a player of his caliber. They got injuries as well. Jed Cartwright, who's already a makeshift center, he was injured, so that actually shifted Latrell to center in this game, and then they brought Nikarima onto fullback. So it's so close but so far for the Rabbitohs. I definitely expect they're going to be there in the finals, but a game like this, that's what it comes down to. There could be the difference between you playing top four footy and you got two chances, or now more likely you're going to be playing sudden death footy in the finals. And I don't think too many teams would want to collide with South Sydney, because, as I say, yeah, they're still one of the form sides of the competition and very scary on their day. The multi-killer game that I alluded to before, West Tigers 32 beating the Broncos 18. This is an 18-point underdog West Tigers coming out with the 13-plus victory. So they were like $7 or $8 just to win. I don't know off the top of my head what they were paying 13 plus, because I didn't consider that. So, look, in terms of we had a best bet, this was our one losing bet, and this also cost us the mixed matchup because we needed 20 points or more by the Broncos. We did pretty well. We were on Warriors. They got 12 points. That's not great. But then we were against Penrith, who only got 10 points, and we were against Cronulla, who got 21, which was about par. But you come into this game, Broncos team total was 31.5. We only needed 20 points. Feeling pretty confident. Beautiful conditions, Suncorp Stadium. As Nate says, then you could have got $37 about the Tigers 13 plus. So that's pretty mad. And they weren't even leading at halftime. But we're in a great position coming to this game. As I say, we're flying. We just won our 10th straight best bet. We had -15.5. The line closed 18.5. We're $1.10 to win the mixed matchup. We had multiple multis that were alive. And I felt really confident. And all you can really ask when you put these bets in on a Wednesday is that you go into a game feeling confident that you've got a great bet. And sometimes it just, these are the sobering reminders that even in a game where you really feel you're in a great spot and you've nailed your handicap and you've got all the confidence in the world, that there are going to be results that really surprise you. And if a game turns out nothing like you predicted, then you just got to say that's punting. And, you know, the ones that hurt me far more are the games where I am adamant after the fact that we got it right, but for whatever reason, some key moments, key decisions, or just key bounces cost us, and then we're still going to cop a bunch of criticism for a crap tip, even though it so easily could have covered. Well, I don't have to make any excuses about why Brisbane didn't cover here. I thought they were in a prime position for a massive performance, and they were spotty. Now, I know Adam Reynolds, they said he might have been a bit sick going in, and then he was off for HIA at one point, but really no excuses for Brisbane. They were just not as sharp, not as polished and as they have been in previous weeks. And I thought they were really building nicely. But I don't know, did they underestimate their opponent here? It's disappointing if they did, because the opportunity was here for Brisbane to make a push towards the top four. But they just looked a little bit out of sorts. And West, on the other hand, I didn't think it was a guarantee that they were going to fold or they were just going to be, you know, mentally crushed by what transpired at the end of the Cowboys game. But I thought that if Brisbane are red hot in this one, it's going to be very hard for them and they're just not going to feel like they can win or that they're in the game. But we got that wrong too, because West rebounded admirably. They took the fight to Brisbane. They scored the first try. Broncos got quick fire a couple back and Brisbane looked like they were going to take a 6-point lead to halftime. And I was still feeling pretty comfortable with that. But West scoring a try right before the stroke of halftime was crucial. Tuolungi, he's looked really dangerous for the Tigers out on the left edge, and he goes through basically untouched through some good ball playing from Jock Madden, because of course Madden came in and took Luke Brooks's position, and they didn't seem to miss too much without Luke Brooks, to be honest. And the guy that had a whale of a game is Adam Dewey. I think he had a double, but he's a really talented player, you know, and this coming back off an ACL. He's only been back about 3 or 4 weeks now, so it was always going to take him a little bit of time to probably find his feet. But he's a star, and he was the best player on the park last night, and he went a long way towards leading this West Tigers to a victory. But level scores at halftime was anyone's game, and to be honest, you still think Brisbane should be too good. But in the second half, it was West who took their chances. And when they got that penalty for that hip drop on Carrigan, which was delayed, the ref didn't see it. I don't think the touchy saw it, but the bunker eventually picked it up. That allowed the Tigers to get a penalty to go 8 in front. And then they got the try later, which I'm happy with. Some people will argue it's a double movement. To the letter of the law, Tigers prop, his name escapes me at the moment, but he breaks through towards the try line to score right under the post. The ball carrying arm hits the ground and he does kind of lift it, but his body naturally is still moving forward and momentum takes him across the goal line. So I think the bunker got it right saying that momentum took him there. I think it was just a natural action to slightly, you know, bounce or thrust his body forwards because he was very close to scoring. And I don't think that's a fair excuse for Brisbane. They just were a bit off their game. Tigers bang up for it. Tigers did replicate the effort that deserved the 2 points in North Queensland. And so you have to say credit where credit's due. And that really crushed what would have been an amazing round for us. As I say, if the result kind of goes the other way and Tigers are the ones off their game and Brisbane's hot, then, you know, we could be talking extra 50 units of multis where we would have won our mixed matchup and we would have gone 5-0. But that's how it goes. And that's why this isn't easy. And that's why we love the rugby league too, because a side that was coming last in West can come on the road and upset one of the form sides in the competition. So you just got to tip your hat to West. And again, I think take the lesson from it that there's no certainties in this game. And there's a reason we play the games. It's not just played on paper. The Knights-Bulldogs game, I probably don't want to talk too much about this because it was a bit of a bludger to watch. Bulldogs 24-10 did most of their damage in the first half with some enterprising footy. The guys that are killing it, Matty Burton, terrorizing opponents with the way he kicks the ball. It's a thing of beauty watching him kick the ball, both for field position and also, of course, his bombs, some of them just uncatchable. Addo Carr is constant threat, the two connecting, Burton and Addo Carr, and they did it again with an early chip over the top that allowed Addo Carr to get in behind into the Knights' backfield and lay on a try. And Marshall King, the guy I talked about on Wednesday as one of the form hookers in the competition. And it's going to be bittersweet for the Dogs when he leaves, because they are getting Reid Marnie in. But that's a great pickup for the Redcliffe Dolphins, as I said, on Wednesday. And this Dog side is an entertaining footy side. On the other side of the equation, the Knights are, as I said in the group chat, like, tough to watch. And that's probably being kind. Like, they're putrid to watch. And I know that Kalyn Ponga's not here, but they had enough ball in this game the whole second half. Every moment was just set up for the Knights to make some form of a comeback. As Dan Lever, our legendary admin, who, happy birthday, DL. He had a birthday this week, but he's also a long-suffering Knights fan. So I'd love to know what he reckons about the scenario, the fiasco, because this game was at McDonald Jones Stadium. There's full grandstands full of Knights fans. Like, they're coming along to watch their garbage team play against somebody else that's bottom four, and it's packed. And this is the performance they give. It's so disappointing. I mean, Knights did score two tries, and arguably both of them were off dodgy passes as well. But I just thought, I know they're limited on talent, like, don't get me wrong, but the way that the Knights were attacking when they got set after set on the Bulldogs line, it's like Milford had the ball and he was trying to be Canberra Raiders Milford and run side to side and hope that he could beat someone one-on-one, because there's no structure. They don't throw anything at their opponent. They're happy to go one off the ruck so many times. And what, to get to a kick and hope that the kick deflects and they're going to score a try? Like, I just don't feel like they're throwing anything at their opponent. I feel like they're the easiest team to defend in the competition. And you can give a lot of credit to the Dogs because they did a lot of defending in that second half, but the Knights threw nothing at them. And then Adam O'Brien, who I know I criticize nearly every week, and Dan Lever says, can't believe he hasn't already been sacked. But he comes out and is trying to say, oh, six all second half. I'm just disappointed in our start. Like, you're missing the point. You're not playing against the premiers. You're at home. The Bulldogs are not an unbeatable side, and you had all the ball second half. And the Doggies absolutely butchered a try at one point where they had the ball of a turnover and Matty Burton kicked in behind again. And the only reason the Dogs don't score is because I think it was Shop and Adokar both went for the same ball. There's two Dogs there on their own and they collided with each other. But the Knights are just posing no questions to the opponent. I mean, what are they? I just don't know what they're practicing. And Adam O'Brien in the press conference says he's not happy with the defense and he's not happy with the contact, but was very quick to say, I've been involved in four teams in a row that made a grand final. Now, if he feels the need to justify his resume, I'm like, yeah, that's great. I guess whoever was the water boy or the trainer for Melbourne or the Roosters or recently Penrith can say they've been involved in a few grand finals. But Adam O'Brien, you've been the coach of the Newcastle Knights since November 2019. So shouldn't we judge how good you are as a coach based on what you've done coaching this team for now nearly 3 years, and just saying you're not happy with the contact, you don't think your team is resilient enough? Well, doesn't at some point that fall on the coach? That's my question. And not to mention Jacob Carraz, who looks like a star in the making, scores a hat-trick, as if that doesn't rub salt into the wound enough. He was on the Knights roster at the beginning of this year and they let him go because they had Edric Lee and Dom Young. And look, actually, Edric Lee and Dom Young are two very solid wingers. But you're really going to let like an 18 or 19-year-old star go because you've already got two starting wingers? Like, we see every club, you know, thrives off the depth that they've got. You really don't want to give up potential superstars without a fight. And this kid is special. And as I say, has a hat-trick against the Dogs. And one of his tries, Kiraz's tries, is like, he was covered. Jake Clifford was coming across in cover defense. The Bulldogs never had an overlap. And he just makes a move and kind of gets airborne, but still should have been pushed into touch. But Jake Clifford didn't seem desperate enough to get across to him. And I think this is all just symptomatic of a Knights side that has no heart, no soul at the moment, as Dan Lever uses an even more colorful word to describe the coach of his side. So I can't imagine that AOB is going to be long for that job, while the Doggies covered the line and were well-backed. And it annoys me because we should have probably been on the Dogs, but Honest and I both said we leaned to the Dogs. We didn't feel we're getting a great deal of value with a line over a converted try. I would have quietly been quite happy so the Knights get a backdoor cover that they didn't deserve, and then we would have felt like, oh, glad we didn't play Bulldogs. But these garbage Knights, man, it was good fun last week betting against them. We need to do it more often, but when it's, you know, when the secret's out and nobody thinks they're any good, you just, it's hard to get value going opposing these sides that nobody wants to back. So it's just a tough one. And I take my hat off. Genuinely, I admire the loyalty of the Newcastle fans, but I also feel pretty bad for them, what they have to witness. And the final score, I think my graphic is showing a minute to go, but that would have just been when I brought up the page. But I think that was the final score, Cowboys 34, defeating the Dragons 8, and we won our best bet there as well. And our best bet was -3.5 in the second half. And I'd say regardless, you know, whatever line we would have played on Cowboys, we would have won. But that was pretty good execution by us because this was 10-8 North Queensland at halftime. We effectively were laying 5.5 for the game. And, of course, the pre-match line was 7.5. So the fact that the Cowboys didn't cover the line kind of, I think, reinforced that we executed in a good way in that the Dragons came out tough as well. And the Dragons have still got everything to play for their season. And, of course, they're playing at home and that's Strata. But the Cowboys ultimately outclass them. And what a superstar this Jeremiah Nanai is. He's absolutely frightening every time he touches the ball. Just an incredible mover. Like, he's got these enormous hands, change directions, powerful, fast. The Drinkwater had a massive day as well. You know, I think this side is stacked, this Cowboys side, when you've got Hamiso on the bench and he could easily be starting fullback, a starting winger, or a starting centre for nearly any other club in the NRL. And he can't even find his way into the Cowboys' back line. And I just think, isn't that crazy that for the last couple of years, we've thought, like, what have the Cowboys been missing? Among other things, they have not had really any star outside backs. And now you've got a guy like Hamiso can't even fit into the team. But, yeah, story for me. Cowboys taking that scare last week, getting a free 2 points or a very bonus 2 points against West, but leaving it with no doubt this time around. And Nanai is off contract, I believe, at the end of the year, or free to negotiate at the end of this year because he's only got one more year left on his deal. So they were talking about that in commentary, that, geez, there's going to be some high bids coming through for this kid. But for now, he's part of a Cowboys side that added Luciano Leilua, who's also always threatening and skillful wide running forward, added him mid-season. This Cowboy, and they're getting the wins. They're sitting second on the ladder. It's all in front of North Queensland too, as I said before, to be most likely hosting a game as the second highest team on the ladder in the first week of the finals. And that gives you the pathway to the grand final unless somebody can beat you at home. And yeah, there was a pretty funny moment. There was a try stopped due to Jaden Sewer yanking the ponytail of Luciano Leilua, which I didn't even know what the technical rule is, but I suppose it's technically a high tackle where you can't do it. Because funnily enough, I'm a big NFL fan, and there's some players that have really long hair coming out the back of their helmet, and you can legally pull their hair. You can tackle while pulling hair. That's the risk they're taking if they want to grow it long. But in the NRL, you are not allowed to do that. So that resulted in a penalty. The Cowboys ultimately scored. They scored plenty of times in the second half. So that was 4-1 for our best bets, which is a really successful weekend out. Anytime we can have a record like that, always striving to be better and always wanting a bit more. And I'm disappointed that somehow in 3 great weeks, we didn't win any big multis. We went very close on a few. And I'm disappointed that the mixed matchup last couple have gone in as a big favourite to the final leg and come up short. But all you do, it all boils back down to how we see the games. If we can read them mostly right, if we can key in on the games we feel we've got the strongest advantage and then build our mixed matchups and build our multis off of those, then I can never predict when, and we can't control when. And you always need an ounce of luck, especially with anything that's an underdog or a long shot multi. But you're going to have your best success if you can build it on the foundation of a good handicap. And I really feel that Podonis and I are working well together. We've had to build our own combination and we're seeing it pretty well. And we were in a pretty decent hole probably 2 months ago in this season, but we chipped away. We never tried to do it all in 1 week. And I'm pretty happy where we're at considering everything that's gone on so far this season. I still don't feel like we've been overly lucky with our results, but I don't want to talk about luck because that's going to go both ways, you know, over a long period of time. And I have been doing this a long time. So appreciate everyone that has stuck with us and supported us and tuned in along this journey, because you've had a front row seat to our struggles, but also now you've been sharing in the successes, I hope. Further places you can find our tips or share in the journey is I'm jumped on TikTok and I'm trying to come up with more unique content and do short form tips and handicaps and videos. So if you are on TikTok, or those videos end up on Instagram as well. And as I said today in the group, I'm also putting up polls every single game for people to share their tip for the handicap. So if you're following on Instagram or TikTok, it might just be interesting for you to see the results of those polls. For example, over 80% of Tripod followers were on the Dogs today with the 6.5 line. I think over 70% were on the Cowboys with the line. So that might be some punting intel that you can garner from following us on those socials. I know I'm way too old to be probably doing some of those things, but I'm just giving it a crack as Nate giggles at me saying unique content. Right, that'll do us. Geez, 46 minutes of my voice alone. That's more than enough for you guys. So respect if you hung in there with me. Appreciate you. Be back at it Wednesday. Have a great week until then. And we'll talk again when we preview round 21. Lego.